This is lecture number 14, which is seventh in the second teaching cycle for the Temple of the Holy Grail. This concerns the esoteric use of fragrance. Everything that manifests in form in the physical plane has roots in the etheric and the astral and the mental and all the way back to the highest planes of reality, the atmic planes and so on. Everything that manifests in form represents monadic activity in cosmos. Many, many beings do not manifest in physical form and in etheric form. There are angelic beings and angelic kingdoms and devas. There are andines and elementals, and there are many other kinds and species of beings that manifest, not in form of the physical, but in astral or other kinds of ways. But that which manifests in form has a deep, deep root into the very heart of God. And everything in matter in the material world is sacred. There is nothing that is not sacred. Excrement is sacred, and it's vital, and it has roots, and it has meaning. There's nothing that has no meaning. Meaninglessness and chaos are simply the inability to comprehend. Meaninglessness, darkness, and chaos are simply that which is invisible and does not show organization, intelligence, or comprehensibility to the one who views. To a tiny ant crawling on the floor of a room, he has no concept of what a house is, or what a human being is, or what a human life is. He has only his ant language, seven words, and his ant concepts. And to him, the world could be chaotic. When suddenly a shoe comes and steps on him, that's the end of things. He has no way of knowing what is coming or how to avoid what is coming. And human beings are very much in the same position. Even with much guidance, much protection, we ourselves suffer. We suffer the consequences of our own ignorance. All of us are coming from chaos into the light. We are coming from sickness into wholeness. We're coming from criminality into beauty of character. We're all coming from the negative and the dark and the ununderstood and the chaotic into the positive. When Jesus was asked, why was the man born blind? Was it for his sins or the sins of his parents? He chose neither of those alternatives, but said he was born blind so that the glory of God could be made manifest in his healing. And by that is meant that all sickness, all illness, regardless of our puny attempts to interpret them and understand them as karmic results or whatever, all these things are natural and normal and to be expected. It is to be expected that we are all not finished. We are all in the process of still being created. We are all still full of cracks and chaos. None of us is perfect, and each of us manifests with our own imperfections in our own ways. And it is not important why the man was born blind, or why this person tells lies constantly, or why this person can never be faithful to one woman. It's not important why these things are, and it's not important to go back and try to search and find why. Rather, what is important is the healing and the making strong and the strengthening and making full of light the soul and the light body of that person. Flowers are very interesting things because flowers themselves are the sex organs of plants. They are there for the purpose of attracting insects, for the purpose of attracting other pollen-bearing things such as the wind. And flowers are the parts of a plant that manifest during the germination times and that result finally when their wombs are germinated, when the uterus is finally full, in the production of seed and fruit, some of the fruit edible, some of the fruit not. An apple or a pear is simply a ripened ovary containing seeds, bearing seed in itself with the same pattern of the ancestor. And in the process of of carrying through the creative act, which is the act of perpetuation and of regeneration. Certain kinds of plants, especially the flowering plants and certain kinds of trees, at certain times produce very beautiful, very powerful, and very divine and useful fragrances. Now, fragrance is sensed through the olfactory part of the brain. In the lowest of all animals, in one-celled animals, in animals that swim in the ocean, animals that lived in the fluids and the waters, the olfactory sense was the main sense. It was that which could attract one to mates. It was that which could find food. It was that which could take one home. The olfactory sense. And we find the olfactory part of the brain, a very major portion of the brain, much more important than the visual cortex, in all animals, even land animals. Animals like dogs have very strong olfactory development. And even in human beings, there is a very large part of the brain that is devoted to the olfactory sense. Now, it is mostly unused because we've depended so much upon the visual and upon also the hearing sense, which was very important also among the animals in the fluid and water states, much more even than on land. But in human beings, the olfactory senses are very little used and very little understood, just now being studied. But as we have found that there are great and divine and evolutionary effects that can be achieved and created through the use of sound, as there is also through the use of mudra, of motion, and through the use of mandala and of pattern, there is also great use to be made of fragrance. And it has been used from ancient times, and much has developed and much esoteric knowledge has developed about it. For the contemporary disciple, there are many fragrances, many resins, and many pitches that are of great use at this time in history and at this time in the development of the human soul that I'm going to describe. And each of these is useful because each of them qualifies an essence and communicates with an intelligence that goes deep into the heart and soul of the human being. And each of these is a monadic essence. Each of these is a species essence. Each of these fragrances has powers that can be used and harnessed by disciples in their own greater searches for greater synthesis and expansion of the soul. The first fragrance I want to discuss is that of the narcissus. Now, the narcissus plant blooms in midwinter to spring here in California. It has six white lotus-like petals with three golden anthers on a green stem, and it grows from bulbs. And narcissus creates extremely fragrant flowers. It has an association with the color gold and with beauty, regeneration, and solitude, and relates to the lotus power of transformation. In practice, we get narcissus essential oil, and we use it with rose for high spiritual communion. When we're doing some kind of spiritual work or liturgical work or ceremonial work, if we use rose and narcissus, it greatly enhances the ability of the participants to maintain a very high level of spiritual communion and consciousness. If you add amber, which has its own special characteristics, then it becomes useful for high manifestational work and liturgies that create and bring things into physical manifestation and physical being. Liturgies done, for example, on the new moon for beginning things and seeding projects. Narcissus also dissolves the causes of imperil. It dissolves the causes of irritation, and it's useful for that purpose. And in healing, it can be very helpful in a labor room for a birth or for the healing of children or the bonding of adoptive children. In cases of adoption, the use of the narcissus fragrance is very helpful in creating a bonding between the new parents and the child. It's also useful in stimulating the healing processes of women for afflictions of female organs. This fragrance, the fragrance of narcissus, actually involves a connection with the fairy world. Fairies are a very specific class of beings that may be related to and invoked for certain kinds of work, which I won't go into at this time. And the guidance from this world may be invoked by using the narcissus and using the name narcissus. It has that use. This is a very brief outline of the use of these fragrances, and I'm not going to give all kinds of details at this time. The white lotus. Essential oil, the essential fragrance of the white lotus, contains in it a power that we might call the power of spiritual transformation. Now, the lotus is not only an olfactory, an energetic olfactory substance, but it also has a visual power as a visual image. The lotus, the visual image of the lotus and the allegory of the lotus is in Eastern mysticism what the visual image and allegory of the chalice is, or the grail in Western images. In the East, the lotus begins from the muck of the bottom of a pond, and it goes upwards and it seeks the light through the unstable watery environment, which is related to the mental and emotional environments, mostly the emotional and astral. And when it finally is able to sit on top of that, it spreads out a green leaf and a bud appears in the sunlight. And then feeding from the sunlight, it opens up the petals one by one. And as the human soul grows and expands, we talk about the petals of love and the petals of knowledge and so on, until finally the golden center is revealed. And when finally the petals of the lotus fall away, when that time is finished, then the perfection of the soul has been achieved, the monad, which is the higher self, the highest of the higher selves, the higher ego, is revealed as the golden center, the fruit of that flower. The same is true then with the allegory of the chalice, which when the tears of the chalice, the layers of the outside parts of the chalice have burned away in alchemical work, what is left then is the at the center of the chalice, held as on a pedestal, the philosopher's stone, or the elixir. This is the kind of imagery and the kind of power associated with the lotus, the white lotus fragrance. Now, in practice, the lotus essential oil will open and activate in a spiritual way, in a positive way, a specific chakra when it's placed on a skin location for a specific work. Now, this is not something one normally does. One normally works with all chakras at all times. And to work with just one chakra can lead to a tremendous imbalance. So when one does do special work with one specific chakra and use the white lotus for that, one must wash the oil off when the work is done, not leave it there. There is a color of heliotrope or violet, very close to a heliotrope or violet color, that is associated with the use of this and that potentiates the power of this fragrance. For example, we might use the white lotus on the throat if we were doing powerful manifestational work with the Aum. We would use it in liturgies of transformation and alchemical work and certain kinds of initiatic liturgies. This is also a very powerful fragrance to use with psychological and mental healing. For example, drug addiction, codependence, emotional codependence, addiction to tobacco. Things that require spiritual transformation, that require an inner transformation before the outer symptom can be relieved. It's a subtle catalyst to facilitate positive transformation. That's the white lotus. Now, I should mention before I go on any further with these fragrances that these are not perfume oils. Perfume oils are derived from the various flowers and things through processes using substances like lard or alcohol. But true essential oils have no alcohol in them, and they are very pure, and they are diluted in another kind of very pure neutral oil. It can be an oil that has no odor or smell, a cold-pressed almond oil, or certain kinds of chemical oils produced in a laboratory that are useful for this purpose that will dilute it enough to make it usable on the skin and for other kinds of things. And these can be purchased usually at health food stores and things like that. The best, some of the finest oils that are made today are made at the Sri Aurobindo Ashram in Pondicherry, India, and they are available in this country, and they're not very expensive, because the mother, who was the head of that ashram after the death of Sri Aurobindo, and who was his partner for so many years and worked so beautifully with the transformation of the cellular level and so on, the mother, Mira Alfasa, when it was decided to build the Matra Mandir in Auroville, the great spherical temple, she sat personally, and she was a great, great higher mystic and psychic. She sat with over 400 kinds of flowers and devoted time to them for years, and was able to psychically discern their usage and their spirit and what it was that they brought, simply so that these flowers and herbs could be planted in the right kind of order around this temple in India. And the information that she received, along with the information that is traditional, I'm not talking about folk and herbalist use, but I'm talking about through the master tradition of Europe and in the traditions of the masters in the Himalayas and other places, that combined with the mother's work, combined with special work that Marie and I have done with these fragrances and the usages that I've made of them for many, many years through much personal experience, has resulted in this knowledge that I'm passing on. Now, gardenia and jasmine are higher and lower octaves, one might say, or by higher and lower octaves, I think I should say, I shouldn't discriminate between the two as though one is greater than the other, but they are, one has a more spiritual usage, the other more on the physical healing level and the physical level. Both are two octaves of the same kind of energy. Jasmine is, so to speak, the lower octave, and gardenia the higher octave, of a power that we might call purity, and it's associated with beauty and purity. This is an essence that is associated with the intelligence that we call the mother of the world, the virgin mother, this, and all things related to sacred family and to the feminine. It's associated with the angelic world and the innocence of the angelic world, and those who use it must have purity of heart and mind, no crudity or half-hearted habituality or anything else involved in order to work with this essence. It has to be approached that way. That kind of crudity will nullify it. You cannot, this is definitely not something that nullifies irritation or imperil. As a matter of fact, irritation or imperil can nullify it. So it has to be done in a very pure environment. It's associated with a very rich blue-purple color, and that can be used to amplify and potentiate its power. In practice, we use the gardenia or the jasmine, depending upon the kind of work done, for all the bodhisattva practices, the general form of which might be described in this way: to visualize oneself with 1,000 hands each, with a sensitive conscious eye in the palm, representing compassion and help that is sent forth into the sentient world to help all sentient beings without discrimination. Visualizing the self with 1,000 hands, each with a sensitive, conscious eye in the palm, directing compassion in rich blue-purple rays unto all need. This fragrance can be used for all of these practices that are distance healing and so on. They use for all anonymous and unseen service to link with the ray of the Christ and of the Bodhisattva, all works of love for love's sake only that are done in that way. Now, you can use this on the throat, the ajna, the palms, and the pulses for this kind of work. It is also an oniropampas, or a high spiritual dream bringer. It brings high spiritual dreams. The gardenia can be put upon the crown and the ajna at nighttime, especially on nights of full moons and things like that, to help bring conscious spiritual dream contacts. Now, in healing, it's used in the kind of healing that's done from a distance and invisibly. And depending upon what there is to be healed, what's being worked with, if one is working with someone who is ill, a human being who is ill, with cells that have to heal and this sort of thing, then one uses the jasmine. If one is working with emotional and spiritual healing, one uses the gardenia. You can use it also when working with plants. And those who are sensitive to plants and work well with plants can make great use of this, of the fragrance of jasmine. And it's also used with working with children, in healing of children to facilitate effective rays. When you're working in a very present way with children, you can use narcissus, but you can also use a little bit of jasmine or gardenia to facilitate healing with children. It also facilitates memory and healing of yourself, and also skills that come through the fingers and the toes and the extremities. You can use jasmine on your to help with radiance type work. I'm talking specifically now of musicians who are doing high work with their instruments on their fingers and their toes and their extremities when you're creating sound or other kinds of things, writing with a typewriter or something where you use your fingers and your extremities for a spiritual purpose and for a healing purpose. The jasmine, a little jasmine, facilitates this. And if you're doing very high spiritual radiance work, that is work which I will define only as becoming the center for a radiant blessing that flows outward. For example, a bishop, doing a bishop's blessing, or a very high form of the grail work, then the gardenia can be used with that, and also for distance healing for large situations, nations and countries and so on. And the gardenia and the jasmine, but especially the gardenia, contact the angelic kingdom. And can bring assistance from specific angels by name. If you're doing work with angels, gardenia is a fragrance that's very useful to use. Now, the rose is one of the most powerful and all-purpose and useful fragrances in spiritual work that there is. While the symbolism of the various colors, white and red and so on, vary, the essential fragrance, even though the fragrances of all kinds of roses are different from each other, but the essential fragrance has basic powers of spiritual beauty, communion, and presence, divine presence. Rose is a very powerful dissolver of impearl-forming irritations, and it creates a spiritual radiance in the aura of a person who uses it, or a place where it's used as an incense. In practice, everyone who is working should apply the rose essential oil daily, before morning meditation, to the crown, ajna, throat, heart, solar plexus, nape of the neck, the pulses above the palms, the pulses are where the blood comes close to the skin at the wrists, and the soles of the feet. This will permeate the aura with something that will defend against impearl and irritation for the day and the work of the day. You can use it as an incense for all spiritual gatherings and communions, grail work, and for private meditation. You can inhale a little of it from time to time during the day, and it will be a purifier of the lungs. You do not apply it for sleep or for dreams because it will be too stimulating. Rose oil is like the element copper in metallurgy. It has the power of copper and Venus in that sense, in that it can, it's a medium like olive oil that can bring all kinds of other fragrances, other essential oils together in a harmonious blend so that they can work. So that if you're going to blend, for example, amber and narcissus, then use a rose to blend the two together. If you're going to blend a jasmine and a narcissus, then use a rose to blend the two together. It's a medium to unite the powers of all the other fragrances for specific works and purposes. It works at one of the best combinations is the rose and amber combination. You use it with amber for healings and consecrations and any kind of work with light energies, but you do not use it mixed with amber for exorcisms. You still use the rose as a defense and as a protection, but the amber can provide the amber acts as kind of a wild card when you're starting to deal with negative forces and negative energies, and you don't use the amber at that time. When I talk about amber, I'll explain a little bit more about why that's so. In healing, you use the rose on your hands when you're doing any healing or any ordination or any exorcism or any other radiation of divine power through the hands. And then, when you're done, the rose is protecting, but you also need to use clear water, which you wash over your hands, your palms, and all the way up to the elbows. If it's a matter of exorcism or some kind of working with disease, but if it's working with consecration or ordination, whatever, simply sterilize it with the breath, that is to balance it with the breath, is enough to be done. But whether one has a vibration, has taken a negative vibration upon oneself through healing or exorcism, or whether one has simply empowered the palms of the hands to be a channel for very divine consecration power or anything else, in both cases, though one is negative and one is positive, one still needs to mute out and nullify the force that has been accumulated and the vibration that's been accumulated on the hands. In the case of negative vibrations, it's with water up to the elbows. In the case of positive, the sterilizing breath, once one has received priesthood, will do the job. Otherwise, it's with water. Now, amber is a very special substance, and with the amber, we are now starting to look at something that is different than fragrances of flowers. We're looking at pitches and resins. And the pitches and resins of the pines and the cedars and the deodars and the eucalyptus and sandalwood and many other kinds of trees are very powerful. That's what all incenses, all smoky incenses are made with these resins. And one of the things that I have done for years is when I go to a place like Mount Shasta or Mount Whitney or a place where I can go high up in altitude, especially where there isn't very much human contact and where there are beautiful pine and juniper and other trees growing in a very pure environment with very little human vibration around. On many of these trees, you can find accumulations of hard, dry, and very beautiful smelling pitch or resins. You don't want to collect the wet resins, the ones that are drippy, that are full of kerosene-like elements. You want to collect the dry ones that can be ground up in a pestle. And the dry ones that appear like appear brittle, can be then crushed and used as a smoky incense. But they're not smoky in the sense that an incense stick smokes, or much of the incense that you buy will smoke. Because once you take a powder of a fine cedar resin or a fine juniper resin, and you put it on a hot coal, which is not smoking, it's just hot, then it almost vaporizes. There's very little black smoke. There's very little to irritate someone who has asthma or a sensitive lungs. It almost just instantly poofs and sublimates into the fragrance, and that is the way you use that. Now, the incenses that you buy for church uses and so on are made of these things, but they're also mixed with dough and other kinds of things, and when they burn, they're very smoky. I call these the smoky incenses. We don't use the smoky incenses because, first, they create their effect by literally burning up the substance that is to be spread around, and so you're